You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today is a special episode. We are bringing Lauren Young back onto the show, and we are proud to announce that this book that we've been working on for quite some time is finally live, finally out there. First off, I just want to say, hey, Lauren, welcome back to the show, and great to have you back, and congrats on getting the book out there. Finally, we've been working on this for a while.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Adam. It's good to be back with you, and I love the fact that Volume 7 is available and on the market.
Fantastic. Well, Lauren, you know the drill, as do our audience. We'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Lauren, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Lauren, what mission matters to you?
Well, I want to just acknowledge your mission. I love the amplifying of stories that you help people like me do, because life is full of an array of experiences. Some are just life-changing and really propel you in new directions. Others give you great challenges that become these foundational learning experiences. And what I've come to appreciate about Mission Matters is how you help position people like me to bring our stories forward. So I'm all about helping business owners close the gap between what they earned and what they should have earned. In other words, what did they actually earn and what should they have earned? And so the aim of my business is Keystone Revenue Solutions. And we really focus on the two ends of business, that is generating sales and being able to generate those sales at a profit. So we love helping business owners who are struggling on either end of the spectrum to be able to close that gap between what they actually earned and what they should have earned. Because when you stop and think about it, entrepreneurs are some of the hardest working people in the world who put everything at risk to try to realize their vision. And sometimes that's just a little harder than it needs to be. And people like me are here to help them make it easier.
Yeah. And so great having you back on. And we're definitely going to get into your book content, really keys to improving sales and sales solutions. But I don't want to assume that all of our new listeners or new visitors maybe caught some of the earlier work that we've done together. So maybe let's just start off with a little bit about your background and really how you got into business.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a home where, you know, work was important. And so at a really young age, I actually had my first own business where my clientele were retirees living in trailer parks. And I was 7 years old and I would ride my bike into these trailer parks. And I actually put a little 3x5 card up in their community center offering to pull weeds. And so I would come in and pull weeds around a number of different trailer parks within the town I grew up in. And I'm going to actually name the town, Adam. I grew up in Yucaipa, California.
Oh, wow.
And California sits at the foot of the San Bernardino Mountains. And when I was growing up there, it was a retirement community. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of business. And while I was 13, 14, 15, I had this really good route where I could make a lot of money pulling weeds. And it was just something that started me appreciating the importance of being where your customers are and making it easy for them to connect with you. So I kind of put that on back burner when I went into the retail grocery industry because I could actually make more money that way. I got an MBA really to appreciate the importance of businesses structured and organized to bring more people to do business with them. And that led me into initially a career in sales, I started out with PPG Industries in a business-to-business sales experience, and then that I parlayed that over into another Fortune 100 company where I rose through the ranks at Nationwide Insurance through a series of different positions that ultimately led to me being one of their VPs of a business unit's marketing and sales function. That then led me into small business ownership. So when I retired from corporate America, I bought my own business and had a number of really good years. And then I realized that I wasn't loving what I was doing. And so then I branched into consulting where I could both my corporate knowledge, my small business knowledge, and help people reduce the stress levels in their life as they try to make more money. And that's where I'm at today.
And so, Lauren, I want to stick with a little bit longer on the earlier days of the career, because we didn't. So, like, one of the things you said, not only in your mission, but just now by your example, I mean, pulling weeds, doing things, like, this is hard labor. And so when I think about what it takes to succeed as an entrepreneur, there's a lot of work, obviously, that's involved. But sometimes, I don't know who said it or why, but, you know, sometimes you're climbing up a ladder that's on the wrong wall and you're doing a lot of work as an entrepreneur. Maybe you're not getting the results you want, and maybe you're putting in more effort, and there's so many, I'll pick on myself, like on the early days of Mission Matters and of me being an entrepreneur, you know, I'm working a lot of hours, but I wasn't getting the results that I wanted. And a lot of it was due to me growing as a business person, understanding sales, business, mm-hmm. business profits, how all of that looks. We're going to talk about the book. And I feel like on the book side of things, you're definitely working with your, you know, more, let's say, accomplished entrepreneurs, and we'll talk about what that looks like and how you as a business scientist are really looking at the numbers. But I want to, before we get into that, I want to talk about the just getting started out entrepreneurs for a little bit longer.
Okay.
What kind of things would you talk to them and tell them? What would your message be ultimately to, you know, get them through those early days that will eventually get them to the point to where they're considering big business profits and how to allocate those and how to increase sales and all these things, like the younger group? Let's talk to them for a moment. What kind of message would you tell them?
Okay. So actually, I would take them back to a really important transition point for me. Growing up, I had a couple of uncles who were corporate lawyers, and they were very successful. And so going into college, I saw myself going into a corporate law path. And I actually, my sophomore year of college, I took three classes. I took business law, which I aced. I took introduction to marketing and introduction to accounting. And in my introduction to marketing, I struggled with the professor, but it was the first textbook I ever got that I looked forward to the reading assignments. And I fell in love with the discipline of marketing. And it was in my accounting class where I actually had my first really great professor who I just loved, but I wasn't as tuned in and dialed to the discipline of accounting. And so I pursued a degree in marketing. And what I appreciate about the function of marketing is it really is about the exchange of value. So a business offers products A, B, and C, and each of those products has some value component that the customer is seeking to acquire. And so they're going to pay money to acquire that product. And the reason they're going to pay money to acquire the product is they have a need that they want to satisfy or a want that they want to serve. And so business comes down to an exchange of value. And so if I was sitting in front of a group of budding entrepreneurs who are starting out, I would really encourage them to pause and reflect on what's the value they're creating for their customers. In other words, what are they going to develop and offer that someone's willing to pay a price at that you can earn a profit off of? And that exchange of value is at the core of every single business around the world. So be clear on that exchange of value, because then that will position you to not only make money on your sales transactions, which is every person buying from you, but it'll also help you connect those that should be buying from you but aren't.
Yeah. And I love that you make it, you boil it down to what business is about, right? The exchange of value, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're giving a service, whether it's pulling weeds, whether it's creating content like this, whether it's a book, I mean, whatever the value is that you have for the marketplace and somebody's willing to exchange their, a little bit of their coin for it, hopefully a lot of their coin for it, depending on your service, right?
Well, and when you stop and think about it, Adam, anytime somebody parts with money, mm-hmm. To you, the business, that they have conveyed to you that I believe in what you've told me, mm-hmm. I want what you're offering me, and I'm going to give you part of my hard-earned money to get what you're selling, and mm-hmm. and that's to me, that's a position of honor where you're honoring sacrifice. And for some people it is a real sacrifice because it's hard to make a buck these days, and so every time they part with that money, they're voicing give them more than what they're giving you, mm-hmm. so that they'll buy more from you. In other words, they'll become a repeat customer and they'll refer you to others, because that's really the holy grail, is to get more people buying from you and then to refer you to others.
All right, let's jump around a bit here, Lauren. I do want to get into the book and spend some time there. So, Profits Originate with Customer Sales was the title of your chapter. Mm-hmm. Learn 7 Keys to Improving Both. Just for everybody watching this, just to let you know, we're not going to go through all of it. We still want you to pick up a copy of the book. Speaking of exchanging value, I do want you to part with a little bit of money and pick up a copy. So the link to the book will definitely be in the show notes, so you can take care of that. But Just to dive in, Lauren, first off, a lot of things, big career you've had and are having as an entrepreneur, a lot of different topics you could have chosen, I've followed your content, a lot of different content pieces. Why this? Why now?
Well, when I looked at the objective of the book, and that's tips to success, I reflected back on where I've been over my career and what I've come to appreciate. And I really appreciated this during my small business ownership days, where I had a team of people working for me, and we were pushing to generate more and more sales each year. What I came to appreciate is that the hardest work in business is generating new sales. Yeah. And it took me back to my PP days, where I was in a business-to-business sales role, and getting new customers is tough. It is hard work. And then when I pivoted into a series of corporate staff roles nationwide, what I came to appreciate there was just how few fully appreciated how tough sales are. They don't realize that getting people to part with their money is tough, especially when you're in a competitive situation and there's lots of alternatives. Mm-hmm. And so the function of sales is hard to excel at. And for a lot of small business owners, this is actually the most constraining part of their business, mm-hmm. is getting that next new set of customers that they can make money from by delivering them something value. And so as I worked with different businesses, I would find myself coming in and actually relying on some of my accounting knowledge and helping them stabilize their ability to manage cash and to make more on what they're selling. But what I would find is that, yeah, okay, they can get control of cash. They can make a little bit more, but what really holds them back from achieving what I think is the ultimate for small business owners, and that is financial freedom. What actually holds them back is generating enough sales, sufficient sales to fund that. So it's one thing to earn a profit on $1 million in sales, but if you could hold that profit and get it to 10 million, you've changed your life. Yeah. And so that's why I chose sales, because I appreciate how hard it is to do, especially when you don't have a big brand and a Fortune 100 company backing you. Sales gets even harder when you're one of those small guys competing in a sea of different sized competitors. It's tough. And that's the focus for this. For my contribution.
So in the chapter, you write about, as I mentioned, multiple points, so seven key points, one of them being a model to generate higher sales. Can mm-hmm. you talk about the importance of maybe a model and developing a model so that you can get results?
So let me give you the context behind this model. So I was VP of marketing sales and sales at a pet health insurance company. And when I came into that role, we had really bad retention. In other words, I came in and we did a lot of assessment of our customer base, and we had this enormous drop off, and we had two big spikes. It was at the end of month one, it was the end of month three, and then it was in month 11 when we would trigger the renewal. Those were our big spikes and drop offs. And what I came to appreciate about those drop offs was that we were too quickly to close. We had an inside sales team that were working the phones, and that was the number one source of our sales. We also had an online presence, but in both cases, what was happening is we would jump people from initial inquiry to a hard close. And we had some salespeople who were phenomenally successful at that, but what was happening was because we were skipping a couple of those stages that are just naturally part of the progression of going from ignorance about a product to purchasing that product, we had to slow down a little bit to build a little more affinity around why they are considering pet health insurance. And what we did is we built affinity that helped them understand how the product worked and how it would help them take better care of their pets. And as that affinity started to form, their knowledge would be grounded. And so the part that was missing was the affinity phase with some knowledge. And so the model is actually ignorance. So people don't know you exist. They become aware of you. That's what your marketing is trying to do, is generate awareness. That awareness then leads to knowledge. That knowledge, people begin to form affinity for things that they now start to understand and they want. And then that will lead to purchase. And the purchase is a big deal. And so those people that dropped off in the first month or the third month, they are in the next phase, which is the sale phase, which is experimentation. And what they were led to believe and what they actually experienced wasn't meshing well, and those would drop off. So by getting the front end better, which was really around moving people to knowledge and affinity, we were able to clean up the back end. And so our retention numbers went through the roof.
Yeah.
And we were able to take sales. We were able to grow sales by 200% by just getting that little bit of connection there that was missing. And that's what this model's about. It's about progressing people to a confident purchase.
And to me, that's exciting. Like if I'm a business owner and I'm watching this and I haven't really considered what you're talking about, to me, there's a lot of hope in that. And that's why, like here, we're always looking at our sales process on different things and trying to reevaluate what makes sense, what doesn't. You talk about brand affinity. How do you produce? How do you educate? Like all these things. To us, that's kind of a never ending cycle. And at this point, it's part of our DNA and how we put out content. Like we're always reworking, rethinking, how can we create a better experience for the viewer? And now it's in our DNA, but I can't claim, and I don't recall when we had that shift or that turning point. So in my opinion, some of the people that'll watch this might be a turning point for them, especially as they read your chapter, as they listen to your interviews, as they dive into some of the other work that you're doing and workshops and seminars and other things, like this may be the turning point for them. So where would you say that if an organization doesn't have that in their DNA already, where do you say someone starts?
I think the most effective way is look at your customer, those that are really good customers. In other words, they don't scrap and fight you for the lowest possible price, but they allow you to make some money on the transaction you're doing. So you start with your best customers. What do they look like? And what you're really trying to do is this isn't about their demographics or some creative narrative on that put some personality to them. What it's about is real clear problem identification. And I'm coming to you with a problem, and they're looking to buy from you to solve that problem. And you know, when it's around needs, it's those basic things that we just need to function and have some joy in our lives, as opposed to, you know, you got these wants, and those wants are actually just higher forms of need that people are prepared to splurge on. But the point is, there's a problem they're trying to solve. What's the problem? So you got to get clear definition around that. And then the next thing you want to really appreciate is what's their purchase decision criteria? In other words, how are they going to collect information such that they can determine whether or not you can solve their problem and if your solution is worth what you're asking for? And so you're trying to get a sense of what their decision criteria is. And so you really start by knowing your customers and appreciating what it is you do that they value most, and how did they come to decide on that? And those can actually be really fun conversations with some of your better customers. You can learn a lot about your business by listening to them tell you about how your product or your services make their lives better.
So I want to jump around a bit here. So let's address maybe for some of those that have that in their DNA, and they do. And this is kind of the phase we're at right now. So we always are trying to get better in terms of the content, the product. We talked about it. We're even trying to get the books better. Like, and you've consulted and given us some wonderful suggestions that we're going to implement. But now let's say it's kind of, so it's in your DNA, you have this culture, you want to improve, but maybe you're light on the documentation side. Can you make an argument for, and you did in the book, but can you kind of address why it's a documented sales process leads to more sales?
Well, the most fascinating thing that I've come to appreciate is that many people think sales is an art. You know, and you've got these really smooth, I'll even use the word slick, salespeople. And there are people that are gifted. They're naturally gifted towards selling. But there are more of us who sales is an uncomfortable space. In fact, a lot of small business owners I work with, they hate sales. They actually dread it. And because of that, their businesses struggle more than they should. Mm. And they aren't positioned to engage more of their employees in the process of selling what that business does. Mm-hmm. And so the value of a documented sales process, which I like to refer to as a persuasion process, because sales actually occur at the point of persuasion. So that's when somebody is persuaded to transfer their money to you in exchange for your product or service. Mm-hmm. Commission salespeople, that's what you're paying for. You're not paying for all the front end stuff that move them into your business as a lead and a potential sales process. What you're paying for is the actual conversion, which is at that point of persuasion. And so when you think about a sales process, what it's about doing, it's about documenting that decision criteria and creating logic around how you move somebody through those phases so that they don't drop off before you get a chance to help them really appreciate what you can do for them. And so businesses that have a documented persuasion process are businesses that are more likely to get better conversion rates because they're continuously improving how they bring people through that awareness to knowledge, to affinity, to purchase. As they move them through that, they have more success. And that's a documentation. You got to have a process with which you can take people through.
So Lauren, you mentioned working with small business owners. I'd like to take some time here and definitely talk a little bit more about your business and exactly how you're helping and consulting with small business owners. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, the sweet spot for me are passionate and purposeful business owners who really believe in what they do. They see They see their business as an extension of them being able to help more people. And what they're looking for are insights and ideas into how to be and do that better. So I like to work with inquiring minds, people, and they're still not getting the results they want. That's my ideal person, because what they're doing is they've got that, you know, that trial and error where they're trying something, they're building on what works, they're jettisoning what doesn't work. And I love to come in and help fill some of those voids, because sometimes it's the smallest little shift that can produce this enormous result that can really change the face or the trajectory of that business. And I love helping people see those, appreciate how to capitalize on it so that they can ultimately, what I like to say, make more money with less stress. Because life has enough stress in it. And if you can make more money, that takes away part of the stress. But then you also got to be really smart with how you deploy your time. And so that's who I like to work with, are businesses in that situation.
Yeah. And I like the way you say that too, that sometimes it can be small changes, because for people that maybe haven't worked with a consultant or just don't, they, you know, nobody's arguing that somebody doesn't know their business or doesn't know. But to me, every time I've worked with somebody outside, our processes improve, like everything just improves, even yourself. So you being a part of the book and helping and, you know, contributing, you gave me some feedback. I'm like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Like, you gave us, in your natural way that you love helping businesses, you gave us plenty of insight. And so I can't even imagine what it looks like to work with you on a one-to-one basis or over time and some type of engagement and fashion to make sure that you're having ongoing results. I guess my question to you here would be, like, how do you typically work with individuals? Is it kind of one-on-one consulting? Is it through seminars, through workshops? Like, how do people digest your content?
The people that get the best results are really relying on me to help them pause and reflect and think about their business. And so I like to help people introduce into their business what I call routine and rhythm. Routine and rhythm is about creating some disciplines in the business that are foundational to making it more successful. And so, for example, my routine and rhythm is it's a weekly call. The first week and the third week is forming the cash health of the business. It's about looking at the cash position, and it's about being able to project cash inflows and cash outflows so that you're not caught in that position of stewing and sweating over do I have cash to get me through my next payroll? So it's about building discipline around managing cash, because this is the one thing I took away from my accounting 101 class. When you're out of cash, you're out of business. And so one of the things I like to start off with is about improving donors and their management team's ability to project and manage cash. And I like to turn it into a game, in that, you know, as we get the discipline rolling, I like to look at the difference between what we projected it to be and what it actually was. And I've got one client now that runs through about $500,000 a month in cash, and we're getting it down to where we're almost right on top of each other.
Wow.
Because we're really good at, you know, working together to anticipate the timing of the inflows and then use those inflow timing to manage the cash outflows. The second week is what I like to refer to as the look back. It's look back at the previous month. And what we're doing is we're really isolating on three things. What went well? Where did we get stuck? What should we do differently? And so it's about with some proximity to the actual month, it's about looking back and seeing, okay, how did it go? What did we really learn in this month that we can apply going forward? And then the fourth week is built around projecting at least 2 months ahead. Months, we're going to generate this much in sales, we're going to spend this much in direct costs, this much in overhead, this will be our operating and our net income. And then that's part of the second week look, where we're looking back and we're looking at how did we do versus plan. So we projected X and we delivered Y. Do we understand why the difference is? And if we do, great. If we don't, it's again those opportunities to learn. Because you go back to the Wizards of Wall Street and you think about the quarterly earnings calls that happen between the Wizards of Wall Street and the publicly traded businesses. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're keying off of. You said you were going to do X and you did Y. And if X and Y are really close to each other, the stock's going to go up. If X is lower than Y, in other words, I said I was going to do this and I came in here, they're going to punish that stock.
Yeah.
And vice versa. They don't like it when you actually did a lot better than what you said you did. So it's about control. You best control your business when you can work within what you're anticipating to happen. And then in those months that have 5 weeks, we actually do a management development where we pick a topic that the management team could improve on, become more knowledgeable about. And so this routine and rhythm we build keeps it what I call a continuous improvement trajectory, where they're continuously learning and applying what they learn so that they get better and better results. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, I just have to say it has been great having you back on the show. I am thrilled to continue to promote this book with you and your work. And I know we're talking about working on some things together. I won't spoil it on this episode, but I definitely see us doing a lot more work down the line, really to add value to the business community, because, hey, we need you out there. That being said, if somebody is watching the show or listening to this and they want to connect and they want to inquire about working with you further, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way is via email. And we'll use the email that's easiest to remember. It's Lauren, that's L-O-R-I-N, at laurenyoung.com. So visit my personal email and then I'll connect you to the best path forward. Because as each of us are in different spots, different positions in our lives and in our business, and sometimes it is about resolving those most pressing problems. Other times it's about pausing and appreciating what's going on. And so that's why we like to look at the state of the business and where the energy of the owner is, so that we can help move them where their natural energy is to improve things. And so Lauren at laurenyoung.com.
Fantastic. And we're going to put all that information in the show notes so that the audience can just, you know, get the information and connect with you and your team. Speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging with an episode, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, really why they do what they do, like what wakes them up in the morning, gets them fired up to go out there and make a difference in the marketplace. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting or fun or exciting to you, then we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Lauren, again, really awesome having you back on. I can't wait to the next time we get to work together. Thanks again for coming on.
Very good. Goodbye, Adam.